Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Minorities in Publishing podcast. This is Jen, and for new and returning listeners, you may know you can find the podcast on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, TuneIn, and Spotify, as well as on Tumblr, which may change soon, at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com, and on Twitter at minoritiesinpub. And I am very psyched to be talking to Rena Barron, who is the author of The Kingdom of Souls, which is young adult. But she also has another middle grade coming out next year called Maya and the Rising Dark. So you have not one, but two books by Rena to get. Just get it already. Pre-order the middle grade, buy the YA.
Thank you for having me on the podcast, Jen. So happy to be chatting with you.
I am too. We're going to have a lot of discussion because Kingdom of Souls, there's a lot going on there. And I have to avoid some spoilers, which is going to be a little bit difficult because it kind of happens a little bit, I don't want to say up front, but there's a lot that unravels over the course of the book. So can you kind of give us a snapshot of what it is about?
Yeah. Kingdom of Souls is a story about a girl named Aura who's born to a powerful family of witch doctors, yet she doesn't have any magic of her own. And to get the magic she needs to stop a terrible demon king from destroying her kingdom, she must trade years off of her life in return for that magic. And so the story is really her story and her adventure kind of going through that process of figuring out how can she stop this guy. But each trade that she makes brings her closer to death. So she's got to figure out how to stop him before the last trade steals away her life.
Would you call it mythology, folklore?
I'm not a fan of titles. I think that a lot of stories touch people in very different ways. I've heard people call it mythology. I've heard people call it folklore. I would say from my perspective, the whole world of Kingdom of Souls is made up in the sense that the background, there's a whole history of the Demon King with the Orishas. That history that's there is not really from any story that currently exists. It's kind of all out of my head. So for me, it kind of fits somewhere in between, but I like people to kind of make their own thoughts about where they think it falls. I think it's not for the author to define the category for a book. It's for the readers to take it and live with it and determine what it means to them.
So I want to talk about power and how absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yes.
And that's a big dynamic here because you said it was Aura?
Aura, yes. Yeah.
For the main character, Aura, and we're in her viewpoint the whole time. So this is first person, close, you know. And she's the narrator and she's the person we're following. And from the very first page, we learn about the importance of magic and power. Essentially, we learn through her that there's a desire for power. Power is respected. Power is passed down, usually. Power is something that everyone's clamoring to keep. It's very Game of Thrones. Without the incest. No incest.
Exactly. None of that. I would say something that was important to me to make a distinction on with this book is in Western society, power is defined quite often by status that is money or related, class and such. And you'll see this a little bit between Aura lives kind of, and she's been in two places. Like her parents come from the tribal lands. They come from a tribe and they now are basically immigrants. They live in a city that's more kind of modern and really focus on money and power and politics, where in the tribal lands, that power is magic. So a lot of kind of the dynamics I wanted to play off of is, what if we have a system in place where money in tribal lands doesn't mean anything, but magic is important? And what does that magic mean? And that power has a lot to do with their connection with their god, Hikka, in the tribal land. So the power is mostly why it's so covenant, is because the more you have, it's this concept that you're more connected to your god. And so they have tied, the tribal people have sort of tied those two things together.
Everyone's black. This is
very black.
Very black.
I love it.
I was reading through it and how everything unravels. There's a level of complexity here, especially for a young adult book. And it's not to say that young adult books shouldn't be complex or anything like that. There's just so many out there that are doing great work and really kind of making people think about the things that the characters want and how they're achieving it and how portrayal feels, especially by elders. And so I'm wondering how this all came together for you, because there are just so many elements. You're creating the land, things that are very topical, things that are, it's fantasy related. You know, like there's so much to creating a world. Not to say artists aren't doing that essentially all the time, but you really are creating the lush outfits that people are wearing and the rules and the voices, because they're interspersing. You're hearing from the gods too, and you're hearing the folklore that led to things that Ara is unraveling herself in terms of what is the truth even. So this is a lot. This is a lot. So I can only imagine how your outline looked if you did an outline.
I definitely did an outline. I'm start by saying that something that was important to me growing up and as a teen is that I really crave complex stories, stories about people that look like me. I didn't see many of those, but I love complex stories. I like lush world building. I like a lot of kind of deepness and layers to the stories that I read. And I knew kind of going into this book that I wanted to make sure that I was offering readers something that's not so straightforward. One of the ways I define myself as a writer is I'm never going to write a straightforward story, and it's never going to be exactly kind of, oh, I know what's going to happen, because I want people to be surprised, and I want people to sort of peel back the layers to find more beneath the surface. So that's something that has always been very important to me. And so in Kingdom of Souls, I did quite a bit of outlining. That is one of my favorite things about writing.
Get out.
The brainstorm. Yeah, I love it. Oh my God.
Get out of here. And I'm curious. I would love to do a poll of, okay, fantasy sci-fi writers, how much do you plan versus contemporary writers who are just like, I'm just feeling the world, you know, they're crossing, you know, jaywalking.
There's a little bit of it for me living in that world. So for me to understand it, I really needed to know what the everyday person, the average person, what do they experience as they go about their daily life? Mm-hmm. And what I did discover is that Ara's life is a little, it's sheltered and it's one way. And then there are all these people who don't have magic and have no chance of getting magic. They're living a completely different life. So I needed to understand the parallels between how she navigated life versus how the rest of the world did. And I think the point of view, the world view is completely different between kind of the two sets. And that's something that I wanted to make sure that I understood, because, you know, in a sense, I'm the commoner in the world. I'm just watching what's going on with Ara and her family and all this kind of cool or sometimes scary stuff. But I want to see it from the outside of her point of view. Even though we're in her point of view, it was important to make sure there's enough of the world outside that people can get a broader perspective of things.
And that ties into, like you were saying, class. Because this is the thing, right? I read across genre, but admittedly, I don't read as much fantasy or sci-fi as I would like. Also, what gets sent to me, right?
So,
you know, you start reading one thing and people just keep sending it to you. They're like, oh, you like that? You'll like this. So you're just like, I really don't like that, actually. So, but I always think about the complexity that goes into, like, with spreadsheets and knowing the language and the worlds and the way in which worlds are just built and the viewpoints of worlds, as you were saying, like, you're an observer, but you're also the creator at the same time. So you are in people's mindsets, like, you know their motivations.
Yeah.
And so
that's true.
Yeah, right. So then when it comes to that and the machinations of motivation within worlds, do you see a level of manipulation in terms of, I need to make it work for where this is going? Or do you find like it is even more organic and that motivation really kind of builds the world?
I definitely think it's organic and the motivation builds the world, because there are definitely twists in this book that I did not see coming. Really? I know that always seems so odd coming from the writer, but the characters, once they kind of take on a life of their own and they have a personality, you know, I planted the initial seed for their personality. But as they move through the scenes of the book, there are actions that I thought I was going to write for them. And then I would get to those parts and think, oh, no, that's not what's speaking to me now. This character is going down this path, and this is actually right for their action based on kind of the path that they've kind of developed on. So I think as much as authors kind of driving that initial story, I think there's a little bit of the world kind of taking a life of its own. I've created the base of it, but it then starts to grow into something else. Like the whole mythology behind the story. So a little bit about the mythology. 5,000 years ago, there was a demon king, and he was eating souls, and the Orishas tried to stop him, and they imprisoned him in a magical box, chained with some of their souls, because he gained that much power where he was basically godlike. That mythology started as like, okay, this is kind of basic ideal. It can rattle into the current world and what R is going through. But it started to really define how some of the characters relate to each other, how they interact with each other, and motivate some of the actions that they're doing far beyond kind of what I initially planned for them. So I think it grows a little bit.
I definitely think so, too, because we get some of those interspersed bits as readers. And then as more gets disclosed, we see how much lies play into the perceived stability of keeping things as they are. And I feel like this is something I see in a lot of books. And this is not to say it's cliche or anything like that. I feel like this is just something that, especially in children's lit, it's like there's this real seeking of not just knowledge, but truth. What is actually happening? And do you feel as though, especially through Ara, that that is a perpetual journey, especially for someone who's coming of age? Is I really need not just these identity stories of I'm coming into myself, but how does the world work?
Yeah, I think that that was something that was conscious in my decision with kind of the initial characterization for Ara, to really think through not just the self-discovery, but how does her actions impact the world around her? How does the world impact her in thinking about the decisions that she has to make on a level that, you know, I think a lot of, we don't give kids credit, I think, or teens credit. I think they're going through a lot of tough things and a lot of deep things. And that was something that I wanted to really explore, to think through when a character is kind of going through this life-changing thing, not just coming of age, but something that's really big. I mean, the world that we live in today, our kids are going through some really hard times and having to deal with some tough subjects, and we can't protect them from that. And one of the things that I wanted to do was to hit that head on in the sense of giving Ara a challenge that would really not only grow her as a character, but help define her own kind of world viewpoint. Think about, sometimes it is a little bit of how you kind of grow apart from the way your parents think, but ultimately the theme with Ara is that you can be someone who is ordinary and affect positive change in your world. Mm-hmm. It's not just, you know, it could be your community, it could be your larger country, it could be the whole world, but every little action matters, and it kind of builds up from there within her character of these little things that she's doing that will possibly impact the world that she lives in a better way. And I think it's important that kids can see that message in stories, and especially people of color, you know, and Black kids who haven't seen themselves kind of centered in these kind of stories and being the chosen one. I know we hear all the time that being the chosen one is such a cliche and we're sick of hearing it, but there are not that many stories that we've had where people of color get that opportunity to kind of be the center of their own story in this sort of way. And I didn't want to sugarcoat it. The story is dark. It's very dark, but hopeful. I think there are some highlight moments in there, but I didn't want to sugarcoat it. I wanted to put challenges for Ara that were realistic to the storyline, the bigger picture, and kind of how she moves about the whole kind of world of Kingdom of Souls.
And Ara, I mean, yeah, she gets beat up a little bit.
She does. Yeah. She does, but she bounces back. So I think that she's a very stubborn character. She's very resilient. She might take after me a little bit in that way.
But she's also not petulant. You know what I mean?
She's not.
This has been something I am of the mind that I don't necessarily need to like a character, but I need to relate to them. Also, I think relatability comes from predictability. So if I can predict what you're going to do, I can't really relate to you in a way, because then it feels very one note. And Ara is someone who I get along with on the page because I relate to the struggle that she's going through. She just doesn't do these rash things where you're just like, why would you do that? Like, seriously, why would you do that, girl? Like,
Yeah, absolutely. I've read many books where I'm like, no, don't.
Right? Right?
I think a little bit of that plays into the cultural background and how she was raised and that culture in the tribal lands where it's like you are intentional with your decisions. There is, you know, a level of obviously of self-sacrifice that happens there. And that kind of plays into some of these the decisions that she makes as well. So I think that is kind of why, for me, it just feels like, you know, the things that she does, it's natural to kind of her upbringing. And also she's longing for this magic. You know, her family, her father and mother both are very powerful witch doctors. And she's longing kind of for that. But there is an aspect of wanting it for greater good, not necessarily wanting it just because, oh, I want it, you know, it's fun to have. She's thinking about the bigger picture. And I think that speaks to her family dynamics and how she was raised, that she's already kind of thinking about how can I use this for a greater good.
Exactly. Because she has a conflicted relationship with her mother. Her mother tends to be distant due to the work that she does. And she's closer to her father. And so it's not even dysfunctional. It's just, oh, I'm closer to my dad. My mom's a little cold. That's just who she is.
and I feel like in the world of YA, we have to be careful to be honest in relationships and how we depict family life. Because in real life, this is common that a person could be closer to one parent or the other, or not close to either parent. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to kind of create that complexity because, again, kids need to see reflections of themselves in books. And there are kids out there who probably are experiencing not being so close to a family member. We don't want to create this false ideal of what a family life would be like, because I think kids can use books, adults too, we all can use books where we can see ourselves and say, okay, I see that little dysfunction or that way this family works. I see it reflected in my own family. It's normal that it's like this. And we don't often see that, I think, in cases, especially, you know, for books that are own voices or people of colors, where we're seeing just kind of different dynamics that we don't always get in books. And I feel like in fantasy books as well, people are craving kind of to see a little bit more of that.
Yeah. So I appreciate that Ara is very relatable and not a brat.
She's definitely not a brat.
She's not a brat. Because I've read some books and I was like, this person's a brat. I don't understand.
I don't see her mom being the kind of a parent that would let her be a brat.
No.
Her mom is very strict, and I just don't see that as being something she could get away with.
Well, so Ara cares about people, too. It's not as though she does come from a level of prestige, so she does have a good ranking. She is of good blood, so to speak.
Yeah.
Right? So even with a mom who's just a little bit distant, or a lot distant, and a father who's just kind of makes up for that in tenfold by very being warm and
embracing to his child. She could see both sides and experience both sides and still want to be a good child and a respectful child and want to be loved by her parents, as well as just want to be part of the community as well and have friends in the community and be interested in people and dine friendships and potentially relationships and all this stuff. So she's just a character that I was very into following. I read it on a Kindle, my Kindle app. So I don't know how many pages it is precisely.
I don't know either.
Yeah, I can't tell y'all. I know that it told me it would take like 8 hours to read the book. That's what it told me. Yeah, it's like it'll take 8 hours. And I'm like, really? Because I don't know.
You know, we revise so much, it's hard to say where the page number ends until the final copies are out.
Yeah. But it is kind of epic in its way. You know, it's not a short book. You know what I mean? Because things could have, when I got to the 3 hour mark, it could have been done, but it wasn't.
you're not the first person to tell me that. I always laugh. I'm delighted to hear when people say, hey, I got to this certain scene and I thought, oh man, this was done. And then you just threw a whole thing at me. That's what I want. I want to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah, because I was just like, okay, this is getting rough, y'all. They're where now? Oh, snaps. What's going to happen? Oh my gosh. Titillating. Ooh. So I want to ask, it's your first published book?
It is.
Is it your first written book?
No, I'll tell you a little bit about that. So a little bit of history kind of where this book started. So it wasn't my first written book. I have been writing since basically middle school. I don't know, when I was about 8, I started writing. I tried to write my first 2 novels in high school. I didn't finish them. Then in college, I ended up writing a thriller. So completely different, like adult thriller, completely different from where I am now. But I read a lot of thrillers back then, and I thought, oh, let me write a thriller. And I'm sure it was just a copy of Dean Koontz, because that's what I was reading.
My mom read a lot of that.
I went through a really deep Dean Koontz phase. And then, so that was my first book. I queried first complete manuscript. That was my first complete manuscript, and I queried that to a couple agents. Maybe about 25, got all rejections on that. And then I wrote a second manuscript, a story that was like a dystopian kind of post-apocalyptic kind of story, really when that phase was really hot, and that's what everyone was writing. And that story ended up getting a couple hits, but then getting rejected in the end. And then I wrote Kingdom of Souls, but at the time it was called The Last Witch Doctor. A lot of folks on social media have asked me, why did the name change? We just wanted to expand it, so we ended up kind of switching. The series name was Kingdom of Souls, so kind of switched places there. But I had written that book back in 2013. What was really important for me with this story, it was the first story I had written with Black people, with people who look like me. My first 2 stories had been with white characters or biracial characters, because as I've said kind of many interviews, growing up, I read a lot of sci-fi and fantasy. I didn't see anybody who looked like me in the books I was reading. So I had this ideal that no one wants to read about me. I mean, and it's kind of sad, but that's kind of the ideal I grew up with. And then I kind of wrote this book, and I was like, I don't care. I want to write about people that look like me. It doesn't even matter if you want to read it or not. And so I wrote the story, and super happy with it. It went out, like, to agents. I got a bunch of rejections. I got some hits on it, but it didn't go anywhere. So I actually shelved the book then, and that was in 2014. So I put it away. Like, by Last Witch Doctor, it didn't work, but I love you, I'm coming back one day. And so I left it on the shelf. I wrote a YA that was sort of near future light sci-fi book that actually ended up getting quite a bit of requests. This is where I kind of started to see that, okay, I'm growing a little bit as a writer, because this book ended up getting quite a few requests and a lot of R&Rs. So an R&R being a request for a revise and resubmit. So that means that an agent saw potential in the book, but needed the book to be revised a little bit before they would take it on. That got me really excited. I'm like, okay, I'm getting close. This is going to be the book. This is going to be the one to get me an agent. I revised and resubmitted that book so many times. I think I had about 20 R&Rs for that book, wow, which is unbelievable. But I ended up revising it off and on for 2 years. I completely burned out on it. I think I kind of lost sight to the story and that I was trying to tell because I revised so much. I had so many opinions on it. It was funny because I kind of had burned out on it. I remember it was my birthday and I got a rejection on my birthday from an agent that I was really, really hoping would offer on that book. And she did. And I'm like, you know what? I need a break. And I had never stopped thinking about The Last Witch Doctor, you know, at the time. And I said, you know what? This book, this story, it's been rejected. I have nothing to lose by going back to it. And I went back to the story. I put it on the shelf 2014. I went back to it beginning of 2017, and I wrote it over from scratch. I didn't go back to any of the old version. I needed a fresh start because what I had noticed over the last kind of writing and revising over those years since I put it down is that I had grown a lot more as a writer. I had some growing pains. And, you know, we always are going to continue to grow, but I did have some growing pains and I felt like my writing had improved. So I took about 6 weeks to rewrite the whole book. It was feverish. It was just, the book poured out of me. The story ended up being about 124,000K in 6 weeks. And I'm like, okay, I feel like I'm onto something here. And I ended up telling the agents that I still had R&Rs with for the YA sci-fi that I needed to take a break, that I'm going to work on this other story. You know, and they were all very supportive, so I do appreciate that. So I put those R&Rs on the side and I worked on the story. Once I was done working on the story, I literally put it back on the shelf and went back to work on the R&Rs. And then Pitch Wars was coming up. Mm-hmm. So for those who are listening who don't know, Pitch Wars is a mentorship program that kind of ends in kind of working with a mentor or two to revise your book and put together a query letter and a pitch. Then there is an agent round where they kind of look at your work, the showcase round. And so I wasn't going to do Pitch Wars. I had entered years ago and didn't get any bites. But my friend, Ronnie Davis, who's also a writer.
Oh, yeah, said, Ronnie. Well, yeah.
Yeah, Ronnie. She said, you know, you finished the book and Pitch Wars is coming up. Just submit it and see what happens. I'm like, I guess. I literally didn't really think about it. I was like, okay, I'll send it. So I sent the manuscript in and I got a couple bites of people wanted to see the full and ended up in Pitch Wars. I got two great mentors who wanted to work with me to revise the story. And so I went through kind of that whole process. So it was interesting because I had gone into this revision, kind of writing this book over from scratch with no expectations at all. I wrote the book of my heart. And it's just amazing that somehow that came together and ended up being Kingdom of Souls and ending up selling. So I do think there's always that conversation about, do you write to the market or do you write the book of your heart? And I'm always going to say, you can't really write to the market because whatever is in the market right now, you're already too late because it's already out there. And you might as well try to write a story that you can be proud of, a story that means something very deeply to you.
And so then Maya came along.
Yeah.
So was Maya something you were working on while you were revising or after King of Souls sold?
Yeah. So Maya was a little surprised in a sense. After kind of Pitch Wars, I signed with Susie Townsend at New Leaf. We revised Kingdom of Souls and it went on submission pretty quickly after that. It sold pretty fast, so that was really cool. Around the same time that it sold, I started to work on Maya in The Rising Dark, and I kind of put together a proposal for that. And so as, you know, Kingdom of Souls kind of sold pretty quickly, I started working on Maya in The Rising Dark, and so Susie and I kind of brainstormed on the story ideal, and then I put together a proposal kind of talking about books that would be in the series. I knew from the start it was going to be a series, and then I put together the first couple of chapters. I, of course, because I love world building, I put together a world building guide for the history of Maya and the story, the bigger world. So this was really right after Kingdom of Souls. So Kingdom of Souls sold in December, and we went on submission with Maya in March of the next year. And so Susie, she warned me. She said, you know, we'll see what happens. We went on like a kind of limited submission. We didn't go out very wide. We just sent to a few initial people, the test of order, people that we know had been interested in Kingdom of Souls or interested in my writing in general. And so I'm like, okay, sure. But I did. I was kind of a little burned out because I had been revising for Pitch Wars, and then I'd been writing Maya. And I'm like, we'll see, whatever. And I kind of forgot about it. And maybe like a week after we went on submission, I think it was a week and a half after we went on submission, she called me. She's like, I've got news. I'm like, huh? News? And we were very excited. We got a preempt offer from HMH for Maya. So that was really exciting. And so for people who are listening, the preempt is, I guess it's kind of described as when a publisher makes an offer that to try to get you off the market for a book. So it's usually a pretty lucrative offer to keep you from going to auction or before other offers come in. And you usually have a 24-hour period to kind of make the decision whether you're going to take this offer, negotiate, and all of that jazz that happens on the table. And we were really excited with the offer. But more than that, I got a chance to talk to Amelia Rhodes, who's my editor for Maya, and we just kind of talked about what she liked about the story, and she was so excited about it. And it just got me excited. So we knew that that was the best home for Maya.
So what is Maya about? Can you give us a little snippet of what it's about?
Yeah, I'll start by contrasting where Kingdom of Souls is a second world fantasy, kind of in this whole made up world. Maya in the Rising Dark is actually a contemporary fantasy based in Chicago, where I live. So the story is about a girl, Maya, who discovers that her father is a guardian between our world and the dark. And when he goes missing, she has to fight a horde of spooky creatures to save her father and get him back and stop this veil that is kind of protecting our world from the dark and the creatures in it, stop it from failing so that we can stay safe. So it's quite different from my YA because it's contemporary, but it's got some similar themes. But this is a story where I love this story so much too. I know we all love our stories for different reasons, but I always tell people that Maya is a little bit of me as a kid, her and her friends. So there's Maya, Frankie, and Eli. So Maya is a person who's into comic books, Frankie is into science, and Eli is into ghosts. Dare I say, there's a little bit of me in every one of those characters because I was such a nerdy science kid. And so writing that book has been such a pleasure for me. I feel like all of the quirkiness and fun things that they're doing and their personalities are just kind of a little bit of a reflection of my childhood and her neighborhood. Like, what's super important about this story is that they live on the south side of Chicago in a neighborhood that most people would, like, dismiss. When people come to visit Chicago, they don't think about the south side. She's just a regular kid, in a sense, in that neighborhood. And just really painting the picture of the people around her, the cranky older neighbors next door, the ex-babysitter across the street, just really showing a story about people that we don't normally see in neighborhoods that we don't see. And something that was really important for me with Maya is that I didn't want this to be necessarily a story about police brutality or, oh, this is a bad neighborhood, there's violence and things like that. No, I don't shy away from it, but I wanted this story to be centered on family. So her family and how she interacts with them and her neighbors and the community that they have.
And don't sleep on Maya being in the South Side, because that's where Michelle Obama's from.
Yes. Yes, she is. And Maya's like a neighbor. So I feel like, you know, she's like semi-famous.
There you go. There you go. You have Michelle Obama pop up in like a sequel. Just like,
yes.
And Maya's neighbors, the Obamas. Well, thank you so much, Rena, for being on. I thoroughly enjoyed Kingdom of Souls, so I really encourage people to read it. It's such a different book. Ara is cool. I'm so happy to get to know her and go on that journey with her. And Maya and the Rising Dark comes out in 2020, so you are well ahead of time to be able to put this on your shelves right now. But how many people... keep in contact, be able to keep up, because your book is coming out in September by the time this episode posts. So you'll be doing tours, you'll be doing events. Like, what's going on? How can we keep up to date?
Yeah, I've got a lot of stuff going on, a lot of fun stuff. Easy way to keep up is follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter and Instagram under Rena the Dreamer, R-E-N-A the Dreamer. And then I also have a website, renabaron.com. And then I have a really fun KingdomOfSoulsBook.com website in which you can go and take fun quizzes in the world, see a world map, look at the character cards, look at some of the terminology, story as well.
Cool. And it's funny because it just started raining. We just got a thunderstorm here in New York City. So I feel like I kind of wish that had started at the top of it when we were talking about Kingdom of Souls, because then it adds this kind of ominous...
like, yeah.
And then Ara.
Yeah, so she's like, some special friends. I think it'll be great.
I know, I was like, dang it, Mother Nature, your timing is horrible. So thank you again, Rena, for your time and for this book and for Maya, because I'm gonna buy all these, obviously.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh yay. And thank you for listening. Once again, you're listening to the Minorities in Publishing podcast, which you can find on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, Spotify, and I feel like I might be forgetting one, but I might not be. And we'll see you on Twitter at Minorities in Pub and on Tumblr at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com.